I don't mind anyone talking to me about it anytime. And you know, that's what doing this podcast the first time really hit home with us for. You know, it really taught us that there's never a right or wrong time for us to talk about it.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
So let's do this. Welcome along to the Still Parents podcast. My name's Dan. I'm here, as always, with Ryan Jackson and Matt Whitehouse from the Lily Mae Foundation. How are we?
Been a knobber today.
What a way to kick off. We would like to welcome into the studio Matt and Amy Hall. Matt and Amy, thank you for coming on. How did it? Did you hear back your first episode yet?
Yeah, we listened to chunks of it, haven't we? Yeah. And I think, you know, we've shared it around on social media, etc., to spread the awareness. And you know, when you've got so many family members and friends and colleagues actually commenting on how powerful it was, you know, the snippets and bits and bobs that went out as well, you know. I'm not one who likes to listen to myself back particularly. Mm. I don't think many people do really, but
you know, when you hear your own voice for the first time, it's weird, isn't it?
Weird. But yeah, it was emotional. And I think actually, you know, it was interesting just looking at our faces, and you don't see that in real time, do you? You know, how you kind of what expression you show when you go through that emotion, and when you kind of when you relive what was a very traumatic experience. So yeah, we have looked back at it, and I can see why, you know, we've had so many family members get in touch, and it's been lovely really, because you know, particularly yourself, you've had family members that you haven't spoken to for a while get in touch, and it's kind of, you know, it's connected a few people again. Not everyone knew that, you know, we went through that. It's fantastic to raise the awareness and actually be able to just talk about it with, you know, like-minded people as well.
A lot of our family and friends, like Matt said, they've come out to us even afterwards, you know, when we came back to work for the first time. A lot of people that we didn't even know have said that they've been through the same thing that we've known for years, or that Matt's known for years, and we never knew. So it was overwhelming, but also some of them were like, they couldn't speak at the time about it, which is really, it's really heartbreaking. So, you know, it's nice that we can help as well.
Yeah, it's interesting you say, because like, I had one particular mate of mine who I'd known for, he was an usher at my wedding, and then he spoke to me actually when I drove back from the hospital once we'd lost Callie to get some clothes to come back for Crystal and me and stuff. And he phoned me and kind of said, please don't tell me this is real, sort of thing, and I had to. And then it took him a while to then kind of come round to really talking about it, but then he read a blog that I'd written, and then he basically got in touch with me and said, I need to go for a beer. And then he said, I understand it now, because what you guys have done here through the podcast, and I think you're right, it's a real powerful way of saying it, right? That by doing it on a different kind of platform that you might just do by speaking to people, if they hear you, then they might be able to approach you a bit easier.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. You know, it's not something you want to go up to people and just speak about out of the blue. This is kind of an opportunity to lead into that conversation and actually have a reason to bring it up. You know, I saw your podcast the other day, blah, blah, blah. You know, by the way, me and my partner went through it as well, kind of thing. So, you know, every single person that is impacted in that way, I think is a positive thing. You know, everyone that's been unfortunate enough to go through it, if it helps them to talk about it as well, then, you know, a problem shared is a problem halved, or however you want to say it.
So you found that people have come back into your life?
Yeah, some that I haven't really spoken to a lot, and you know, it's really nice to see, and, you know, we just want to help, and it's nice that, you know, that they don't feel alone and we can talk to them, and you know, it's comforting, isn't it? And you know, that you can talk to someone else who's been through that same experience as well.
I think obviously friendships evolve anyway, don't they? And they ebb and flow, and you meet new people, old friends drift away. But maybe just the intensity of the emotions can accelerate how this change happens. Because we've had guests come on who said exactly what you've just said, Amy. But also, unfortunately, that closer people in their lives before your loss have then kind of drifted away because maybe they didn't really know how to tackle it, or they weren't comfortable about it. Have you experienced any of that either as well?
No.
Oh, that's fantastic. What's your secret?
Pick the right people to be your friends.
I mean, it's very true, isn't it?
It's true. To be honest with you, I try and put myself in these people's position and put myself in their shoes, because, you know, whenever you have a bereavement, whatever kind of bereavement it is, and I was saying to Matt earlier, I lost my mum when I was very young.
You said this on the first episode. Yeah. How old were you? You didn't say how...
I was five
at
the time.
Okay.
So I lost her, and then I lost her father, my granddad, three or four months later. So that was a really tough time for all of us. And it was all condensed into such a short frame, time frame when I was such a young age. But I try and put myself in people's shoes. But even when somebody else loses someone, and you know, you've been through it, we've all lost people, right?
Yeah.
You know, you've been through it. It doesn't make it any easier to have that conversation, because everyone reacts to it differently and everyone has different feelings about it. And, you know, some people will be very open to talking about it. Others will not want to talk about it. They'll want to shut themselves off from it. And, you know, that's fair enough if that's how they want to deal with it. And it's just difficult, I guess, to gauge that sometimes. Mm. But I don't mind anyone talking to me about it anytime. And you know, that's what doing this podcast the first time really hit home with us for. You know, it really taught us that there's never a right or wrong time for us to talk about it. You know, we've been through it. We've been there. We want to raise the awareness. You know, what you guys all do is phenomenal. And we want to try and, just like I say, raise as much awareness as possible.
Do you not bother or get upset about the little things that don't matter as much anymore? Has that have given you like a big life perspective change? Or is that still a change that you're going through?
I think, it's changed for me. Yeah,
I think it puts things into perspective a bit, doesn't it? You know, and I was saying to Matt earlier, before we went through this, we'd have had no idea how it would impact our lives, not obviously knowing that it was going to happen. I mean, you know, Amy falling pregnant was a surprise, you know, let alone a few months down the line. This happening, we'd just been to my nan's funeral the week before.
Yeah, I remember you
as
said
well.
That, yeah.
Which, you know, talk about
kind of emphasizes the point we just made. Yeah,
yeah, talk about things happening. You know, when it rains, it pours, etc. Mm. And that was really, really tough. And you know, it was just all of a sudden one morning, bang, no warning out of anywhere at all. And then you know, the next day, that's it. Mm. But I think you're right. I think it kind of changes your mindset a little bit. It makes you appreciate things in life more.
But did you notice that at the time? Was all of a sudden like, oh, that didn't bother me like it would have done before?
I think you raise a really interesting point. It's not something I would have thought about. Mm. Maybe subconsciously, now looking back, I think actually, I've probably become a little bit more resilient to things, you know, the little annoyances, and actually better at controlling
That's
stress.
That's the word, isn't it? Resilient, yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it does give you that. And, you know, we always like to take from Leo's bravery.
Yeah.
That's coming to us now. You know, he's given us that gift of bravery, and actually that's the worst thing you're ever going to have to go through, right? And if you can get through that, not get through it because it never leaves you, but if you can get through that period of time, then you can get through anything, in my view.
Yeah.
Would you say that your resilience was different for the both of you as individuals? Do you know what I mean?
Because
obviously as a couple, you know, I'm just interested to find out from both of you what that looked like, I suppose, as far as your resilience was concerned.
Yeah, well, I think since losing Leo, I've definitely looked at everything differently now. When I feel like I'm definitely more resilient with every aspect of my life, and I see things differently. And you know, if things happen, I think, oh, that's nothing compared to what we've been through. And I wouldn't normally think like that before. So I think it's definitely given me a lot more like resilience and a different perspective.
Is it you're 25? Is that
So
to be that resilient at that age as well. God, I can't even remember being 25, let alone how resilient you needed to be.
Oh,
at that time.
I was fucking immature.
I mean, me and Matt.
Then?
Me and Matt both through our life have been through so much, haven't we? Through our life. Yeah. It's just been one thing after another all our life, really, hasn't it?
But I mean, you know, we spoke about earlier, you know, how this is so different to any other type of grief that you're going to go through. And you can't explain that feeling, I'm sure you agree, until you go through it. And we were saying, again earlier, that, you know, prior to this, you know, we wouldn't have any idea kind of how bad it could be. And I genuinely believe it's the worst thing that you could go through.
Yeah.
But,
you
know, we've kind of had our breakdowns not at the same time as one another. So we've been lucky, we've been lucky in the sense that, you know, when I've been feeling tender, you know, and upset, Amy's not, and she's been strong. She's been there to support me, and vice versa. And you know, at the time, it was really difficult because obviously with the mother having to go through all the physical side of it, you know, you've got that duty to be there and be strong and be the rock that they need during that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how you got through it, you know, physical things that you had to go through before, during and after, really.
Yeah, well, during when it when, you know, from the hospital and coming home and then back again, I saw my body just shut off. I have to shut off because of what my body's going through, the pain and everything that I'm going through physically and emotionally. I thought, if I break, that's it. I have to keep going and then I can break, because I knew I wouldn't be able to be strong again after that.
Do you think that's do you think that's mother's instinct as well at the same time? Is like, that exact thing, because I always remember thinking that about Amy.
That's the word, isn't it? Instinct.
Yeah.
Because it's since the dawn of time.
I always remember thinking it about Amy. It's like, Amy would, from what I was seeing from the outside in, and we've always spoke about this, that I seemed to be the one that was hit massively right at the very start. And I've always said, I think Amy didn't allow herself to get so sort of like...
Let the shield down.
Shield down, because she knew she obviously then had to go through birth and she had to deliver and all that side of thing. So I think I do genuinely believe, and this shows the difference between the male and female, is that the resilience in that respect is kept there from a mother's instinct, I think.
Anyway, a question for you. Differences between how men and women grieve. How would you say, from observing your husband, how he grieved differently to you? If there was a way, and then I'll ask you the same.
Yeah, I think it's hard because obviously Matt was seeing me go through everything, and you know, same with my mum as well. She was there, but from Matt was trying to support me and hold it together for me, and seeing the pain that I'm going through, and he's hurting as well. He was really strong, bless him. But like he was saying, like 1 minute I was strong, then he was a bit weaker, and then vice versa. But we were completely different. I think, like with me, like I said, I was really, I just sort of shielded myself off. As soon as we left hospital, I just shut myself off from the world, didn't want to go on my phone or anything. And,
Completely.
I didn't want to talk to anyone. You know, I couldn't even see your family, could I, for a while. I just wanted to shut myself off, didn't want to talk to anyone, was just in my own world and just didn't want to know anything.
I'm thinking from the roles that, one of the first things we spoke about in the early episodes, wasn't it? Is the, and Ryan spoke about this a lot, and it was the, you know, the gender stereotypes of being playing the role of the fixer. Were you sensing, like, was Matt sort of being the stereotypical guy? Was he holding in the emotions? Was he trying to fix it?
I think he was very strong, bless him, but also equally, I could see the pain he was in, and, you know, it broke my heart, because a lot of people say it's always, you know, the words like, how is the mum? But it's the dad as well. The dad's seeing the you know, it's their son and daughter, or son or daughter, and, you know, they're going through pain as well. But,
It's the collateral damage that the male gets, really, isn't it? Obviously, all the shit show that you're thrown into, but then you've got the collateral around it at exactly the same time, because you're the one that fields the calls, and Harry's, in your case, Harry's Amy, and I found that quite a lot, that it was always like, Harry's, funnily enough, my wife's called Amy, Harry's Amy, and there was, I knew which people would say, and how are you, but then I also knew which people wouldn't say that, not that I wanted them to. I'll be completely honest, I didn't, because for me, I didn't want the emphasis on me. I wasn't interested in that. My emphasis at that point was on Amy.
Yeah.
So,
and knowing you the way I do now, I completely know that that's 100% how.
Because that's what I am like. It's bizarre. It's like, I don't know if anybody else is like this. At, say, Christmas time or something, and somebody gives me a gift, I hate... absolutely hate opening it in front of people.
Do you?
I hate every bit of it.
I can't wait for our Christmas show this year.
I just can't stand it. I hate it. Whereas,
do you always open yours last as well?
Yeah, I'll take them into another room and do them away from everyone
else.
Of course
he does.
I just can't. I can't cope. Yeah,
I can imagine Ryan opening his. This is shit.
No, it's not like that.
A PS5.
I'd much rather give a gift to somebody and see the response of them than somebody give me something and I have to open it. I just hate it.
To see the look on their faces, or because it makes you feel good?
Probably a bit of both.
Yeah.
But I don't like opening things in front of people.
How did we get down that conversation?
Because I was saying about... I wasn't too fussed that people weren't asking how I was.
Yeah,
because it was all about...
So you think that links back in, yeah, because you said it was about Amy, like as you said about Amy, right?
At that time it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Because that was my view. At that time it was about her. Because physically she was in a ruin.
Right,
mentally she was in a ruin.
Yeah.
So my priority at that point was her.
It's just interesting, the links, isn't it? How it works that way. But as you said, it's been in your personality and character for a while then, I guess.
I'm
right,
just a loving person, mate.
Loving person. I can show you voice notes from last night.
I mean, you can show them to me. I mean, you could make me listen to them rather than show them to me. Yeah.
There you go. See, I told you, any kind of weakness. Anyway, I was just going to say to Matt. So did you feel at times that you... Not that you didn't have a choice, but you felt like it was, as you said, it was kind of your duty to just play that role, as we said, of kind of just being the strong one and trying to help Amy through it. And what did that look like? And how did it feel trying to show your emotion as well? Did you maybe hide bits of it? I don't know. Just interested to hear that.
Yeah, there's no doubt it was a huge weight on my shoulders. But, you know, you raise a really interesting point again. And looking back, yeah, I think it was the same situation in terms of people asking how Amy was and not myself. But at the time, you're so invested in the situation that I didn't really step back and realise that, you know. Yeah. I was wondering how Amy was all the time. I wasn't thinking about how I was. Yeah. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, therefore, when other people ask that question, it just seems the normal thing to do. And I don't think, you know, majority of these people missed me out as of spite by any sense of the word. I think it was just, you know, is that the kind of the norm? Just to ask about the mum. And, you know, it wasn't until someone at work actually said, has anyone asked how you are? That I thought, hang on a second. Not really.
No.
But, you know, not that I need that attention or not that...
No, but it's the fact that all of a sudden it's like...
It just clicked. Like, yeah, well, at that point. It just clicked. But, you know, for me... to be and the situation was that Amy's mum was with us, you know, when all of this happened, and she was very emotional very, very upset seeing her daughter go through that. And my family as well came to visit and they were in tears, and you know, I haven't seen my dad cry a lot over the years at all, but you know, I saw a very different side to him then. And it was kind of, well, you know, I have to hold up here, because if I collapse, everyone else around me is on their knees at the moment. What's going to happen? It's all going to fall apart. But
well, there's two things there.
That's so interesting what you've just said there as well, because exactly the same. I felt like I couldn't even acknowledge what pain everybody else was going through, because I thought, if I do that, I'm going to be a complete wreck. And I wouldn't allow myself, even though I could see it, I wouldn't allow myself to absorb it. And I wouldn't allow myself to absorb it because I thought to myself, my priority at this moment in time is for Amy.
So, it's the archetype, isn't it? The protector. Yeah, yeah, yeah. How much in that are you still with Amy, that protector, that fix it? Because I guess what I'm saying, like, what point, how do I word this? You know what I'm getting at? So you're doing the protector role and the provider, and you're playing up to those stereotypes. But after this amount of time, is that something which still plays on your mind, or still is it something that you still deal with?
Ooh, good question.
It was when I eventually got there.
Yeah, it took you 20 minutes. The
this is savage tonight, man.
You could have prepped me for that.
No contriving this podcast.
No, but it's a difficult one to answer, isn't it?
I think it's difficult because I would say, in terms of like what they call pangs of grief, if you like, so very, very emotional moments, they're very, very few and far between now. In regard to the protector side of things and the protecting Amy and what have you, if we were ever in a situation whereby she was really upset for whatever reason, or there was a boatload of emotion or something like that, then yeah, the protector mode probably would still come out. But like I say, it's very ad hoc now on whenever there is a time.
Interesting.
It might be around Lily's birthday or, you know, a time at Christmas or something like that. So
I'm just trying to think, for the people listening, whatever, because there's, it could be 20 years ago, it might have been, this might be the first episode that you're listening to and it's that stage.
Mm.
So I thought it good to just get a reference.
I was just wondering as well, like, do you think, as your relationship, has it changed?
Yeah, I feel like we've always been strong, haven't we? We've always been a team, but since losing Leo, we've become even more like a team, even more so. Even we didn't think we could we? Because we've always been so close, but even more so now. Like we're more of a, even more of a unit. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think Amy's right. You know, we talked about earlier, if you can get through this period, you can get through anything. And it's really given us that belief that whatever life throws at us, we're going to be there for each other and support each other, just like we did, you know, in this situation. And we look at little things, well, not little things, but we look at the fact that, you know, Leo, when we found out Amy was pregnant with Leo, that prompted us to move in together. And, you know, we got our lovely home together, which... that's down to Leo. There's no other reason behind it. That is down to Leo, and that's what he's given to us, you know. And we're going around looking at places, and Amy just knew that you know, Leo said that was the right one.
I remember you saying that on the last episode.
It's so that's funny. Yeah.
That's the legacy in a way,
legacy,
isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Leo got you your first house.
He did.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
It is. And there's no other reason behind it. Yeah. You know, that is the sole reason. So, yes, it's helped us move forward in our life, not necessarily the miscarriage, but actually, you know, the prospect of Leo at the time coming into the world made us realise we had to grow up a bit, really. You know, we had to start taking life seriously.
Yeah.
And, you know, becoming... we weren't irresponsible by any means, but, you know...
just, I was going to say, what do you mean by growing up?
Yeah. I guess, being more mature, I guess. And just, you know... planning for
going
the future.
Going to bed at one, not two.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah, or maybe half 12, but yeah. just planning for the future and thinking about things home together and professional life and things like that, work-life balance. Yeah. It just makes you assess life differently. And then the same thing happened, you know, when we experienced the miscarriage, we weighed up, you know, a lot of things in our life and it affected the way we looked at things. So, yeah, certainly in that regard, it has changed our relationship, but... In a funny sense, for the better.
We didn't talk about this last time. What do you two do for fun? As a couple, now steady, but as as a couple or as individual, you know, what do you do? Tell us more about you as individuals and as a couple.
Well, we like walking, don't we?
Yeah,
bike riding. We love going for walks. After work, we try and go round our lake and, you know, try and just...
what, your own
de-stress.
Lake?
Hey, your
yeah.
Lake.
Yeah,
you're on
right.
Well, not our lake.
No, mind you.
Any jobs at Bromley going?
With the service charge we pay, you know, it might as well be our lake.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we've got swans at the moment, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
All kinds of wildlife. But yeah,
it's
stuff like that,
yeah.
You know.
Wow.
In football, you know, as you know, there's not much time off. Football never sleeps. Yeah. During the season, it's particularly busy. So, you know, little things like that, going swimming. We've got Blue Water Shopping Centre right on our doorstep, which is very renowned.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Isn't that for the In-Between Us?
I think
they go
it actually
to Blue
was.
Water, don't
yes,
they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. See?
Oh, yeah, they do. Yeah, they're Blue Water. Yeah, let's go to Blue Water. Yeah.
That's why I know
it. I think it was voted as the best or second best shopping centre in the UK or something silly like that. But that is particularly bad when Amy needs new clothes. Doesn't need new clothes, wants new clothes.
Yeah,
that we don't have any room for.
But and they come out of the whole shop. Donuts. Yeah, only in for one thing. I go in, I'm like, oh, that's nice. Oh, I like that.
I've got at home, I've got about half a cupboard of storage to my name.
Yeah,
everything else is
so it's not just me.
No, we bought new wardrobes for the spare bedroom, didn't we? And poor Matt, I've got two out of three of them. Bless
and
him, we're going to share them.
Oh, it'll only get worse, mate. Trust me.
But one of them was so full it collapsed. So we tidied up the whole office, right where we did the podcast last time. We were sat now. That was when it was tidy. A couple of days after that, just walked in. There was just clothes everywhere.
You know what? You need to try. You need to try one of those floor drobes.
Yeah, you know what that is, eh?
Floor drobe.
Yeah, just...
all my clothes are on the floor.
Ah.
Can I just say my joke was completely lost on everybody?
No, it wasn't.
Did you know what I meant?
I knew exactly where you were going.
Exactly.
I had the same Christmas cracker last year.
Yeah. Dickhead.
I think for us it's just the simple things, really. You know, football is very hustle and bustle.
Who do you actually support?
Well, I supported Bromley since well before I worked there, so I kind of fell in love with it. Yeah.
Do you have a say? Is that
he was a fan.
When I was growing up, and I always get called a glory hunter for this, but the first football game that I ever watched was, I think, Man United Celtic.
Well, it makes sense because you live in London or by London. All the United fans live down that way.
I was going to try and tactically avoid that, but anyway.
I'm so too quick, mate.
You are very good. So that was kind of the team that I followed as a kid, but I kind of fell out of love with the Premier League a little bit. And once I started watching non-league, I went down to Bromley. We had 200, 250 people.
You've got no friends. You don't know Dread.
Non-league's great.
It was.
You want some?
Well, you want some.
Huh?
You want some?
Well, the old supply, wouldn't
it?
You know, the first guy that I ever saw score a Bromley goal was a co-op security guard. And it took me, I think, 5 months to see Bromley win a game.
I love it.
And we very nearly got relegated two seasons in a row when I first started supporting. And at that point, there was no intention in my head of, I think I can make a career out of this. Yeah.
But that's the really good thing about non-league football.
I love it.
I mean, it's different now because a lot of non-league footballers are professional, but they obviously don't earn the amount of money that the superstars earn.
What does a non-league player earn now?
It really depends on what club you're at.
I suppose, yeah.
I know some of the salaries at Solihull now in comparison to what they were when I was there. I used to get 25 quid a week.
Is that only if you played as well?
No, I'd get a thingy bonus as well. So I'd get a bare minimum £25.
£25 a week.
If I played 90 minutes, I'd get another 25 quid. Wow. If I only played half, I think I got a tenner or something like that. I can't remember what it was.
Did you used to get the brown envelope? Like, they gave you a brown envelope.
Brown envelope back in the day.
My little pay slip in it.
I had that, a brown envelope. Yeah, like the end of training, you get called in, there's your brown envelope.
There's your envelope. But I think the really good thing about non-league football is the difference in mentality amongst the players. So the players genuinely want to be playing football and they want to be doing well, and the effort, the graft, everything that they put in, they leave every single thing on the pitch. And I get what you mean. You can fall out of love with professional Premier League, even, you know, whatever it is, because at times it's just a complete and a bunch of prima donnas that are just not interested and they're just picking up a paycheck.
Just reminded me, I can't remember if I mentioned this to you, I'll put the link in the description as well after this episode's done, but we had a former footballer on and he'd suffered a loss. Joe Riley. And he used to play for...
Mansfield.
Mansfield he was at. And actually, I think we finished him off because he retired about 2 weeks after he came on the show.
He was at Mansfield. He did a stint at Plymouth, didn't he?
Yes, Plymouth. But I think it'll be an interesting episode, especially with your line of work, for both of you to listen to, because one of the things he spoke about on the episode was when the fans found out about the loss of his baby.
I remember my first game back to Shrewsbury, and I remember coming on the game, the support that I got, singing my name when I came on. I remember really welling up when I started running onto the pitch, when I got such a great reaction. The message of support that I received from all football fans, I mean, that was touching and that was great. You know what I mean? Rival fans, obviously, you know, offering messages of support. There's nothing better than that.
And we all know, if you like your football, it could be quite fruity, could be quite brutal, can also be very loving. And the differences that he got, but that was a form, as well as it being his job, but it was a form of a distraction, I guess, for him, which we always talk about with our guests. So ways that you two, maybe separately or together, mentally switch off.
Well, it took us quite a few weeks, didn't it? Because with my infection as well, it took us a few weeks to get out of the house. And we used to, you know, I used to find it comforting to go to like Asda or Lidl's to distract me, and, you know, because it still now becomes my little comfort.
Was that because it was like normality to a degree?
Yeah.
That makes
and
sense.
It's like not too much, but it's like, oh, we can go to Asda today and then come home again. But even that was enough for me. Like, not even, we weren't out for long, were
just
we?
It just makes you appreciate the little things, I think.
Yeah.
You know, when you're stuck in that mindset, and like Amy said, we, you know, particularly Amy didn't leave the house for a while. Mm. I was trying to sort of, you know, drip feed myself back into reality and normality and social situations.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just that kind of feeling of doing something together that Amy was strong enough to do. And it sounds silly, but something as simple as that, where we can just go and not be bothered by
anyone.
It's
not silly, is it? Though?
You know, and just get a chocolate bar or, you know, get a can of beer or anything like that and just focus on something. Get out of the house, something that's easy, you know, you're not going to have any issues or anything like that. No one's going to talk to you because no one knows you unless you bump into someone, which is not very likely.
You bump into someone at a supermarket.
Yeah, it's awkward, isn't it?
Yeah. One time I bumped into someone, I'm like holding an organic chicken in one hand and a normal one in the other, and I don't know what I look like.
Just start judging their
comes
shopping.
Over. Yeah. It's like, all right, Dad, what are you doing? Like, just
like juggling chickens.
Yeah.
Good thing though about going into like Lidl or Aldi as well is you can literally go in with wearing nothing and come out with a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, from like the middle aisle or something
So did you go through it, Matt? Did you go through a period then of coming home and finding that if Amy had been, there's like just all of a sudden you just the fridge has never been fuller. Like, it just keeps going to
Do you know what it is? It was actually when we sort of were in the shop together and I'm going to go and look at these bits over here. Come back 5 minutes later and the trolley or the basket's a little bit more weighty.
Yeah, I do that quite a lot.
Yeah, you did it today actually as well. Yeah. All manner of things in there. But do you know what? In a funny sense, I kind of look back and I thought, you know, we might not need X, Y or Z, but, you know, if it's helping Amy feel better, then so be it.
Going back to what I said about Joe Riley, the former Mansfield Plymouth footballer, and I think it's because obviously Billy Sharp as well, wasn't it? I think we tried to reach out, and it's, you know, we don't expect everyone to jump at the opportunity to come on a podcast talking about the shittest thing that's ever happened, and they might not want to, but I think it's something, especially with the mental health issues that get spoke about in the game with the end of career and that change of being on that pedestal, and you throw in because it's going to happen to a lot of players that we've got no idea about that have gone through that trauma, have lost, you know, with their families, and so I think it's an area to maybe get into and look at a little bit more.
Absolutely. I mean, we know for a fact that there are, but like you say, when you're in that position, you know, you're a public figure essentially. So
there's no element of trust, isn't there?
Exactly. And you know, you're gonna get some horrible people. But at the same time, you know, what we've found with our fan base is, you talk about the lovely side of football, is, you know, people who may not have spoken to us before, may know who we are from a club staff sense, now come in and, you know, give Amy a hug, or, you know, notice she's feeling a bit fragile, particularly our older supporters. We've got a group I was telling Matt about earlier called Ravens Chat, which is set up. We set up before or just after COVID.
I think I put the link in the description of
We were on ITV.
Is that your podcast?
No, that's Ravens Weekly.
Ravens Weekly,
Ravens Chat could be a podcast.
Yeah.
Is a group for older people to come together who are lonely and isolated in the community and just get together with like-minded people. And that group have become such a unit of strength through us giving something back to them and giving them an opportunity to improve their mental health. You know, they've actually given something back to us, and they've been phenomenal in protecting Amy, particularly from some of our... some people who are...
The Wealdstone Raider.
Oh, you want some? Do you want some?
We were expecting him again once. We rolled out the red carpet, everything didn't turn up.
He made a song, didn't he?
He did. We played the song.
Right, I know there's loads of people who are listening to this, especially overseas. So for anyone, you know, wherever you are, you don't know who the Wealdstone is. A non-league club. It's an old clip. It's about this dude. He'd had a few pints. He's not, I mean, I'm not the biggest, but he makes me look like the Incredible Hulk. Right? And some guy, and no one even started on him, and he just turns around. And then you go, what's up? And
he's like, what's up?
Got no fans.
Yeah.
You've got no ground.
You've got no fans. You've got no ground.
You've got no fans. Absolute pleasure to meet you and get to hang out in the same room as you this time. Is there anything that you would like to say that you haven't been asked yet? Is there anything that you want to finish on?
Well, just firstly, to thank all of you for having us, not once, but twice.
More than welcome.
You know, Matt was telling us about all the amazing work that you guys do, and I think it's exceptional, you know, what you provide for the community in such an area that's really needed. And, you know, there are a lot of people that could learn a thing or two from what you do. So thank you, you know, for everything that you do for people in our position. It's been a real pleasure. And, you know, we just want to raise awareness. Yeah. We want to make people feel comfortable about talking
that's
about this
it.
Kind of thing.
That's
and I
it.
Don't think a lot of people do feel comfortable. So, you know, it took particularly, I speak as part of my job, right?
Yeah.
So particularly for Amy and going
you do the commentary
physical,
as well, don't you?
I certainly
right,
do. I certainly do. So although it's not football, it's a similar kind of thing for
course,
me. But
yeah.
for Amy, you know, this is really difficult, you know, with anxiety and everything like that. And, you know, being able to feel comfortable. I'm really proud of her, actually, and not only for everything she's been through and our journey, but to be able to come and talk about it so confidently and you know, express her emotions. So
absolutely. And
it's really important.
There's no way I can't say this without it. You know, when you don't mean to sound patronising, but it's going to sound it anyway. But I genuinely don't mean it like this. To be able to have that level of, to talk the way you do, with the dignity that you do, only 25 years old, is amazing.
Thank you.
So, and that's not platitudes, it's real.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you all.
Thank you. It's an honour. Thank you.
We are the Still Parents podcast. All the details in the description. If you would like to come on the show, and like we say, you can come on for the whole show. You can come on for 5 minutes. You can come on for as long as you want. We are here to accommodate you and whatever you need to do so you can feel at your most comfortable talking about this absolute bullshit, which is baby loss. We're sorry that you actually have to listen to this podcast, but this is here. This is reality. And hopefully we can reach out for some more people. If you know someone who maybe needs some support, please reach out to them with this. All the resources are in the description, and we are supported by Global. So make some noise. We'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.
Adios.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.